breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, a very, very newsworthy Sunday in Philliesville, as the Phillies did sweep the Pirates thanks to a historic Major League debut from Mick Abel. But the Phillies also with some devastating news before the game on Jose Alvarado. We're going to cover all angles of both of these big stories here and the weekend that the Phillies had against the Pirates, winning all three games, sweeping an inferior opponent, which is what you hoped that they would do, and they done did it. Joining me on the roundtable, Liz Rocher and Justin Clue. Justin, of course, from Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on the Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Justin, mixed emotions here as we're getting ready to chat here on a Sunday night. Good weekend of Phillies baseball on the field. Some rough news off the field. I don't know. How are you feeling here on a Sunday?
Well, it's another one of those games or series where I crunched the numbers and just determined, there's just really not a reason why they shouldn't sweep the Pirates, even if they aren't like 100%. And I wasn't even thinking of the ways they might not be 100% anymore by the end of the weekend. But yeah, it definitely felt like a loss here is a loss in two ways. Once on the field and then again as the opportunity to kind of like, you know, get that loss back that they had against the Cardinals and ended their series of winning series. So that was ultimately a good thing. And I realize this will probably not be the main story of the weekend. But and I realize it also was only happening because of the overlapping calendar times. But the Phillies City Connects with the camo hat, guys, come
that
on.
That was a bad idea.
What is that? Looked like they all had laundry. It looked like they woke up under a pile of clothes and just wore whatever got tangled on their bodies as they stood up. It was stupid. Like, I'm sorry. That was a bad pairing. Bad pairing, and it's very, very unserious. Like, come on, really?
There's very little that you can do to help the camo hat along. There's no combination of shirt, top, bottom that's going to make the camo hat work.
And there's no getting around it, and I know why it's there, and, you know, whatever, it's fine. But the extra dimension of the City Connect aesthetic, and again, talking about the aesthetics here, is just, that was just silly. They looked like an unserious baseball team out there. Like they forgot their hats.
plus the City Connect hats are the strongest part of the uniform. They really are.
Plus the City Connect, like, just as a concept. Like, you know, you get reminded every Friday home game. Oh yeah, don't forget. Sometimes the Phillies wear their pajamas and play baseball.
You can understand why the camo was a part of this. Where the City Connects. I mean, part of the heart of the city of Philadelphia is hunting. I mean, there's the amount of there's just it goes hand in hand, right? You know, when you think of Philadelphia, you think deer hunting.
I get that these, like, and I know they all have their own problematic backstories and everything, but these like branded moments of like, oh, it's Women's Health Month, it's Memorial Day, it's Men's Health Month. They all have these like branded colors and patterns associated with them, and that's just how it's going to be. But like, we all saw that, right? I mean, that was just silly.
It was silly, non-serious. I think it was a good way to put it.
It looked bad.
Liz Rocher also joining us here on the podcast. Liz is doing a fantastic work for Sabre. Follow her on Liz and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling all right. I enjoyed watching the games this weekend to a certain extent when I wasn't chewing my nails. But it was fun once I got over the ugly uniforms on Friday night. Those were truly just a massive distraction to the point where I ended up reading a book during most of the game. The games were good.
They were good. Friday's game didn't look so great. It was 3-1 Pirates entering the bottom of the seventh, but the Phillies were really handed a win by some awful Pirates pitching. The Phillies' patience at the plate. I mean,
I have never seen a team like they talk about. Oh, they really gave that one away. I mean, the Phillies just stood there the Pirates. And this is what I'm talking about. you can't lose this, and you really shouldn't not sweep the Pirates if you're the Phillies. Right. If you're like a Phillies tier team in Major League Baseball, you have absolutely no reason to lose even once to this Pirates team, because look what happened. They were trying to lose.
Yeah.
And then they just stood there and the Pirates were like, rah! And like dropped all the pies at the top of the staircase, and suddenly the game was tied.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And then they added on late, but that was an entertaining, it was an infuriating start and a fun way to end that game. And then, of course, the Phillies really just rolled behind Zach Wheeler on Saturday night, winning 5-2. And then on Sunday, obviously, you had the pitching matchup that we're going to start off the game. Obviously, we're going to get to the Jose Alvarado 80-game suspension and what that means for the bullpen, what that means for their chances to winning the World Series, what the different ripple effects of that devastating news to the franchise would be. But we've got to start off, I think, with I didn't think that there was going to be any other lead other than Jose Alvarado here as we got together on the roundtable. But Mick Abel's performance in his major league debut against the Pirates, a 1-0 win. He outduels Paul Skeens in his major league debut. Really just unbelievable stuff from Mick Abel. Mick Abel, a guy who had an ERA well over 6 last year for the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, who most of the fan base had given up on. He was a top 50 prospect at one time in Major League Baseball. He's now just the Phillies' number 8 prospect. I mean, he really fell down the prospect rankings at the end of last year and coming into this year. But for Lehigh Valley this year, he was throwing more strikes. And we saw in his Major League debut, the fastball was electric. He was clearly pumped up early, but he was throwing strikes. Just a tremendous outing from him. 6 shutout innings, only 5 hits allowed, 9 strikeouts, and no walks for Mick Abel in this game. And did things that really very few Phillies pitchers have ever done before. He became one of only 3 pitchers since at least 1901 to pitch 6 or more scoreless innings in his major league debut with 9 strikeouts and 0 walks. Shota Imanaga did it in April of last year, and Nick Kingham in 2018 are the only other ones to do that. Mick Abel also, I have it right here, sorry, averaged 97.3 miles an hour on his 4-seam fastball. It was 95.6 with the Iron Pig, so he was throwing 2 miles an hour harder in his big league debut with the Phillies. He got 18 swings and misses in this game. I mean, just an incredible performance, an unforgettable debut from Mick Abel. No matter what happens the rest of his career, he will be able to say, I outdueled Paul Skeens in my major league debut. So, Justin, first thoughts on watching Mick Abel this afternoon. 6 shutout innings, all those strikeouts. He looked like what I expect we're going to see when Andrew Painter gets promoted. And I was not expecting that from him.
I mean, that's a Zach Wheeler start. 9 strikeouts, no walks. I mean, like you said, it wasn't too long ago that Mick Abel's debut in Major League Baseball would have been much more fanfare and much more trumpeting would have occurred for sure. And in a way, it's probably almost better, you know, for the mental approach to just kind of get slipped in there as like, Your role is kind of different now because you things have changed and you've fallen down the list a little bit. And now you're a guy that they're not calling up because it's this hotly anticipated thing. You're this guy they're calling up because there was an unexpected injury and, you know, somebody's got to pitch. And so it really caught me off guard when it was announced that it would be Abel making the start.
Me too.
So the deal with him apparently was that, and I believe this was Zalecki telling this story, was that he was a guy who was very cool, tight-lipped, went about his business, you know, nobody's a Halliday, but like, you know, more of that school of thought. But then he would get out on the mound and he'd really let his emotions fly. And the Phillies said, I think this year they said, hey, maybe continue that like ice cold killer persona when you go out to the mound. And that's kind of been the change this year. He said he'd really been through it a lot. He'd thought about like who he was and really gone through like some mental gambit and came out the other end. And this year it's been a lot more effective. His mental approach has been better. And as usual, as the Phillies have proven, the answer to mental health lies in doing what any therapist would tell you to do, crushing your feelings down until you can't feel them because your boss said to.
That's right.
But no. That Mick Abel got...
I think that's in the manual somewhere, yeah.
But that Mick Abel got to pitch against this limp Pirates offense, I think, was also... I mean, that's great. I'm not taking anything away from him.
It's a soft
landing, for sure. But I'm glad that they were the team he was facing, and that also he was facing Paul Skeens. Those puzzle pieces fit together so well because it gave him this great chance to dominate a major league lineup and then get the chance to have people say he outdueled Paul Skeens, the, you know, I keep almost saying defending NL Rookie of the Year, but the last NL Rookie of the Year. I mean, that's huge. What a great extra little feather to put in his hat after the start that he put on today. And he did what he did best. He assaulted hitters with strikes so that they were always battling back and being down in the count. That's what Marchand was saying he's good at. It's an ambush that keeps these opposing hitters in the corner. And, you know, end of the day, this is what you want to see. This is depth. Reaching down to the minors out of necessity, coming up with a start like that. He's going right back to the minors after that. You know, who knows what his future holds, but he showed something to the Phillies. Maybe he showed something to somebody else. Who knows? Well, but, like, the whole point is he came up and he did the best job he really anybody could have expected him to, and probably what a lot of people, nobody would have expected him to do.
Right. Liz, I mean, this is an all-timer performance in terms of Phillies pitchers. He became the first Phillies pitcher to throw six or more scoreless innings in his major league debut since Jared Eichhoff did it in 2015. And by striking out nine, he tied Kurt Simmons back in 1947 for the most strikeouts in a major league debut by a Phillies pitcher since at least 1901. Again, just five hits and no walks for Mick Abel. This obviously has to give him a ton of confidence as he heads back down to the minors. And we'll talk about the fact he's going back down to the minors here in just a second. But your thoughts on his debut here on Sunday?
He was super fun to watch. I really enjoyed it. For me, someone who looks at the emotional aspect a little bit more for, like, guiding my feelings, it was really exciting to watch his family in the stands, like, losing their mind. I'm assuming that's who they switched back to every time he did something cool. And they were losing their minds. And I just, you know, thinking about that moment, watching your son, your brother, your cousin, whoever it is, you know, like, actually notching themselves a space in Philly's history, especially after, you know, the rough couple of years, or, you know, things being not quite the way he probably would have wanted them last year. It felt, I guess he must have felt incredibly vindicated. Like, that feeling, I mean, I'm going to guess he's going to float his way back to Lehigh Valley, you know, because he's down in Lehigh Valley, but now he knows he can do it.
Yeah.
You know, he's made it at the big league level, and he's shown everyone that he's someone to watch out for. Now, of course, that's going to mean everyone the next time he's going to make a start is going to know a little bit more about his arsenal. But that comes with the territory, and I'll be excited to see what he can do to keep everybody guessing.
Well, with his fastball, an extra 2 miles an hour better than it was in the minors, I think that's obviously a big deal. I mean, he was throwing things by people in that outing here on Sunday. It was nasty. And whether he can replicate that when the adrenaline isn't there for his major league debut, we'll see. And we'll see when he gets comes back up to the big leagues. Because like you mentioned, this was just a spot start. They're going to send him down to the minors. And it sounds like we haven't even mentioned the fact since we last did a podcast that Aaron Nola was placed on the injured list. That came out after you guys recorded on Friday, that Aaron Nola is going to be on the injured list with an ankle injury. I want to talk about that a little bit too, the timing and all that, and the thinking behind the Aaron Nola situation. But, you know, you have another guy now, and I think it'll be interesting to see when he gets called back up, because Taiwan Walker is going to be the guy now to assume Aaron Nola's spot in the rotation. They wanted to give Taiwan Walker a little bit more time to stretch out and be ready for that next turn in the rotation, which is why they brought up Mick Abel for this start. But I was wondering, Liz, at a certain point in this game, would they change their plans? Because, I mean, even with the Jose Alvarado situation now, does that mean maybe you want to keep Taiwan Walker in the bullpen to kind of give you some more options down in the bullpen? And if you've the way Mick Abel pitched here on Sunday, I have a hard time going from Mick Abel to Taiwan Walker in the starting rotation. I would far prefer to see Mick Abel make another start than Taiwan Walker get another turn through the rotation. I think the Phillies are playing this smart by sending Mick Abel down to the minors and having Taiwan Walker assume Aaron Nola's spot in the rotation for now.
I think it's probably the best they can do. I think they don't want to mess with Abel too much. I think they want to keep him on a regular pace. I think they've seen some decent stuff from Walker in the bullpen, but I don't know if having Walker there really means that they'll have another option. You know, I think he's been used in long relief a couple of times now, and just occasions for those haven't come up very often. So yeah. I feel like they think he's probably better off in the rotation so he can get some regular work. Now, granted, this is not the minors, and we should not be, you know, keeping guys in the rotation so they can get regular work, because it's the major league level.
Right.
But they are sort of stuck, you know, between a rock and a hard place. They could keep him up, but I don't think they really want to do that with his development. But, you know, setting him down definitely means we're going to see some Taijuan Walker.
Yeah, I mean, Justin, I hear what Liz is saying there, but in terms of his development, I mean, he had a full season at AAA last season. It would seem to me now this is the time that you would establish yourself as a big league pitcher. I mean, he's entering his mid-20s at this point. Like, I think the original thought was that he would be a big league pitcher by this point, that maybe this major league debut, probably under ideal circumstances, had he not had such a terrible season last year, would have happened a season ago. So now he arrived. He had this great debut. I don't know that I understand sending him down to AAA. I don't understand why not just keep Taijuan Walker where he is. I know you're paying him a lot of money, but given what we saw, plans can change. I mean, maybe that's what you told everybody you were going to do before the game started, but after that debut, that's some electric stuff right there. I'm not so sure I'm ready to send him back down to AAA. And if Mick Abel's throwing like that, waste bullets for the Iron Pigs.
Yeah, I guess if they didn't feel like he was capable of making a big league start, even in a moment of necessity, there are other options where it's like, yeah, and that would have been devastatingly telling if the Phillies were like, we need somebody to make a start. And Mick Abel was like, hi. And they were like, who else is around?
Anybody else raising their hands?
Seth Johnson, anyone? I think you're right that he's definitely, like, development wise, it's not like he's at the end, but he's certainly been down there long enough. Like, the timeline makes sense for the Phillies to start treating him like a pitcher who's a part of the organization and not a minor leaguer waiting for his first big break. I mean, you know, this has happened not in the way that it was imagined, but it wound up working out really well for the Phillies and really well for Abel. And now, you know, he's up. He does what he did, and now he's proven, okay, I've earned another shot, at least one, you know, one more major league start for sure. Like, you know what I'm capable, or you have a little bit better idea of what I'm capable of doing here. So he's now part of, like, this pool of options for them as far as pitching. And that's why I'm like celebrating the discovery of more depth. He could have come up, gotten blasted, and we wouldn't have wanted to see him again. That wouldn't have meant that we didn't see him again, but, you know, we wouldn't have wanted to see him again. So I think he's trying to, like, made it clear that he is an option for the Phillies moving forward until he comes up and looks completely lost in the major leagues, if that's going to happen. So that's what I think when we're talking about people's eyes getting opened, that's kind of like the toolbox just got bigger. And as far as, like, Taijuan Walker's role in all this, I mean, you know, yeah, I would love for guys to be able to get in grooves and get comfortable so that they can hit their ceilings more easily. But Taijuan Walker's job is to kind of pitch wherever the Phillies say it's time to pitch. And I'm saying him specifically. That's not even, like, across the board. Like, Taijuan Walker, you're making a spot start. You're our sixth starter. Okay, now you're the fourth starter because too many people are hurt. Now we need you to serve in a long relief role, and that's going to be your job. I mean, he hasn't really messed up in a while, in a big way, in any of those roles. So, like, that's the job. That's the long relief six starter job, is that you're going to be uncomfortable. That's why it's your job and not Zach Wheeler's.
Right. And that's where I want Taijuan Walker. And I think there's, yeah, based on, and maybe I'm overreacting to one great start, but, and again, like you said, it's against the Pirates, a weak hitting offense, but I am super intrigued by Mick Abel. This seems to be the ceiling that we thought that we would get from him 2 years ago. Like I said, when he was a top 50 prospect in all of baseball. Like, this, it didn't come out of nowhere. This isn't somebody who has never been on the radar of top prospects in baseball. This is a guy where this has been inside him. We kind of know that this is what his potential was. He initially had a top of the rotation type potential, and that's the pitcher we saw on Sunday. Now, will we get that again moving forward? Who knows? But I think the upside of Mick Abel and keeping him in the big league starting rotation, I think it's a mistake to send him back down to AAA so that you can move Taijuan Walker into the starting rotation. I just don't understand the rationale behind that.
It feels like they would consider that abrupt. I think it's the one start sample size that is that's one of the main things here. I'm not sure they're worried about his development at this point.
No.
I think it's more that, yeah, okay, that was a great, but it was a spot start and you're going back. I'm with you. I mean, it could have gone either way, but it feels like that would have been a very excitable reaction by the Phillies to make him a part of the rotation.
He faced the Pirates. That's kind of, I think that's something I was trying to say, but completely blanked on, that he was facing the Pirates. And this is the one start we have of his in the majors. Keeping him up for another one would be nice just to see what's going on. But I mean, if they want to keep him, I think there are multiple reasons to send him down, least of all because if they want to use him later on in the season, which they may need to, either in the rotation or putting him wherever, you know, when it comes to later on in September, if things are close in the playoffs, I think that is a decent enough reason to keep him down. You don't want to overexpose him. And he faced the Pirates.
See, I hear that, but I disagree with that as a reason to send him down. So, yeah, you're right. He faced the Pirates. Okay, let him face someone else. Let him see another big league team.
When you say he's earned another shot, that next shot, you know, maybe it's a couple of weeks from now, or maybe it's his next start. I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here complaining if they had kept him in the rotation, for sure.
Yeah, I don't. Personally, I mean, we're rushing Andrew Painter to the big leagues. Like, we want to get Andrew Painter to the big leagues at, what, 21 years old.
And he is not going to be a reliever, ask Dave Dombrowski.
No, he's not going to be a reliever. So, but with Mick Abel, there's this thinking of, you know, let's not go too fast, too far, too hard. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he has had plenty of starts at AAA, and he has been progressing this year. It's not like he had a seven ERA at AAA this year, and they brought him up out of necessity. Like, they've got no other choice but Mick Abel, and now here he throws 6 shutout innings with 9 strikeouts. Like, whoa, where did that come from? Like, he's pitched really well at AAA this year. To me, it seems like the natural progression is just now that he's at the big leagues, just give him another start in 5 days. See what happens. If that start doesn't go as well, okay, now you've got the flexibility. You can move Taijuan Walker down. To me, it seems like you're making an unnecessary move here, and you're potentially robbing yourself of a better option in the starting rotation. Whether he pitched against the Pirates or not, fine. Let me see him pitch against somebody else.
They might have had a plan, and you know, this all happened so abruptly that it feels like it couldn't possibly have been part of the plan. And I think a lot of what they plan with their pitching staff does have to do with squeezing as much as they can out of Taijuan Walker. And he's given them, like, you don't have to squeeze too hard this year. So I think they do want to get as much out of him as they can and prove, you know, that he was worth that money. But
if that's the reason, it's a terrible reason.
Well, there's obviously more than one reason that all of this has happened. I think everything we're describing is a factor that kind of pushed it in one direction or another. And ultimately, the Phillies decided that he was better off down in the minors based on what they were planning to do moving forward. But you're right. That's what I keep almost saying and then forgetting to say is that, beating the Pirates, level one. So give them a start against another team, a better team. It's not going to be hard to find one. And then see what happens. And then you're eliminating it was just the Pirates argument if he exceeds, you know, if he does well again. So, that argument makes sense to me, too.
So let me ask you guys this. We know the Phillies, and we're going to talk about Jose Alvarado in just a second. We know the Phillies are going to be looking for relief pitchers at the trade deadline, high-end relief pitchers to try and replace Jose Alvarado. Do you see Mick Abel now more as a piece that will help the Phillies at the big league level this year, or as something that will help them more at the trade deadline this year, Liz? Like, how much more value does he have? It feels to me like he's more valuable now.
I mean, sure, he's definitely he's more valuable now because he didn't cough up the ball, you know, the first time he stepped into the majors. But, you know, I mean, he definitely has more value if they want to move him. But do they, like, I'm trying to think of who would they get? Like, I guess it's not too early to look at who might be on the market or whatever. But it feels like you don't get rid of Mick Abel, who they seem to think is going to play a role in the future of the Phillies at some point, right? I'm just trying to think. They would have to, I think they'd want to let go of someone. They would want to get someone pretty decent in order to let go of him. His value is upgraded. I just don't know how much that's going to help them.
I think he's on some people's radars now, maybe that he wasn't before. But again, you know, we're talking about one start, and I would assume any team that's been interested in him in the past is well aware of his track record and been following him in the minors. However, where this gets interesting is, you know, hey, this is another year where good teams are missing a ton of pitchers and other teams are rebuilding and could really use a 23-year-old promising young arm to just kind of stick in their future plans and see what happens. You know, it's somebody that's at least worth getting back in a trade where you're shipping out the last few remnants of your previous regime. And with a name like Ryan Helsley getting floated not too long ago, it's starting to feel like the Cardinals are going to feel like they have a lot of leverage moving forward. So I think that with the developments that have kind of occurred around here, the context has kind of shifted a little bit. Now the Phillies are a team that haven't won the World Series in three tries, are making this season all about that, have taken this new business-like approach to getting back to the World Series. They really hadn't had a whole like devastating injury subplot yet. They missed a couple of guys for a couple of weeks, and guys have been banged up and stuff, but it really hasn't been something like this 80-game suspension for Jose Alvarado. So suddenly you're like, all right, look, that shortage of that guy we didn't sign in the winter now feels like there's two guys missing out there, and you gotta find somebody, at least one somebody, to cover that. Now is your willingness to spend a little wider because this is year four of an attempt to win the World Series, and so guys like Mick Abel, okay, now I guess, are we willing to trade Mick Abel? And now he comes up and pitches like that. Now are other teams willing to trade for Mick Abel? Is he somebody that now they will want to include in deals moving forward, assuming that he continues to be as solid or impressive as he was today? Yeah, I mean, I think you got to at least consider it. You know, like that, the starting pitching is strong. Part of depth is that you can draw from it to strengthen other areas of your team. And right now, the bullpen is an area of need for the Phillies, and it became a much deeper and more serious area of need without its best pitcher in there anymore. So you got to at least be considering it, and you got to be able to like connect the events of recent times to see that, yeah, this is something they got to be thinking about, right?
Yeah, I think so. And that's going to transition us into our next area of conversation, which is what I thought we were going to talk about to start off the show today. And that was, of course, Jose Alvarado suspended for 80 games by Major League Baseball. And the real kicker is banned from the postseason this year. This is the same penalty that Jurickson Profar of the Atlanta Braves got when he was suspended 80 games a few weeks ago.
Is that new?
I think you're right. It doesn't feel like that this could have just been introduced this year. I don't remember a performance-enhancing drug suspension of 80 games resulting in a player being suspended for that year's playoffs. That they said that the rule was if it happens in season, they're suspended for the playoffs.
Oh.
But I have to feel like there have been players over the last couple of seasons that received these suspensions, and I don't remember them having to miss the playoffs as a result of it.
It would depend on whether or not they were on playoff teams. And I think that's kind of the key. Because I need to look at a list of, you know, who the recent guys who were, you know, who were recently popped, you know, over the last couple of years. But, like, I not all of them are on the good teams.
No. Yeah.
Who was the last Phillies player to get, like, Phillies big role player to get suspended for something like this? I remember Chooch got dinged at one point.
The last one I can remember is Chooch.
Yeah.
I know that there was some randos. Not too long ago.
There was like Daniel Stumpf was a reliever who got who got suspended for sure. He was using the ex-German Olympic team steroids.
Oh, that's
that
the
they
good
got
stuff
banned
right
for.
There. Yeah, that's like
East
the
German.
Hydra
East
super
German,
serum
sorry.
There. Yeah, yeah. that's the good stuff. No, this was so Alvarado got pinched for exogenous testosterone, which, I mean, who among us hasn't dabbled in the exogenous testosterone
I think the Phillies drafted him last year, actually.
Exogenous testosterone, yeah. Yeah, he was going to go back to college, but they made him an overslot offer, which was pretty, bold of them.
Took a bite right out of the podium when he got up there.
That's right.
Something to see.
So apparently this came from like diet medicine that he was on, or weight loss medicine that Jose Alvarado was taking during the offseason. They'd heard rumblings there during the Rays series that he might get pinged for this. The Phillies essentially were saying like, hey, what are you going to do? Alvarado's not challenging the suspension. He was clearly their best and most important reliever. 4-1 with a 2.70 ERA, 7 saves and 20 appearances. Third in baseball among relief pitchers, and Fangraphs wins above replacement at 0.8. I mean, you talk about the guy in the bullpen you could least afford to lose. You're going to lose him until mid-August, and then you'll have him for the stretch run, but then you won't have him in October. No relief pitcher has pitched more postseason innings since 2022 than Jose Alvarado. My initial reaction to this, Justin, was this could cost them the World Series. Simply put, as important as the bullpen is in the postseason, as important as Jose Alvarado has been to this bullpen, which has gotten better since the first few weeks, but is still the weakest part of this team, and there are still really very few players in that bullpen that you really fully trust right now. Alvarado was one of them. And now you're not going to have him for those October games when it's the eighth inning and you've got the heart of the lineup coming up and you've got to protect a 3-2 lead to get you through to the National League Championship Series. Jose Alvarado isn't going to be there. Who's going to be there? They're obviously going to make an addition or two at the trade deadline. We are now really feeling the effects of Dave Dombrowski and the Phillies not getting an additional relief pitcher this offseason. At this stage of the game, nobody could have predicted Alvarado would get suspended for 80 games, and that you'd be missing for the playoffs. But Justin, that was my initial reaction. Like, this is a move that could cost them. This is not a move. This is something that could cost them the World Series. Is that an overreaction?
Well, I just reached a point in my life where I stopped being able to think like that. So I take solace in the idea that we will never know if what you're saying is a true statement or not. Because, you know, yeah, let's say he's not there. The Phillies blow something late with somebody that should have been Jose Alvarado. But who knows? You could say that he blows that situation too, just because, you know, because you don't know. So again, just remember, take solace in that you have no idea. All right, now that we got that part out of the way, yeah, everybody freak out and run around screaming, because that's totally on the table here. Absolutely, when you have a guy like Jose Alvarado with the experience that he has and the skill that he's shown this year, and that he has been so much better this year and really tightened things up, yeah, I mean, that's a huge loss. I don't want to make this whole episode about how lousy the Pirates are, but this bullpen is now going to be a test of what this bullpen can handle without its top contributor, just like the offense did when they lost Bryce Harper for a while a couple years ago. And they're fortunate that the first level of that test was against one of the weakest offenses in baseball. It was great to see, you know, them hold a 1-0 lead. I don't think there's many teams that this bullpen without Jose Alvarado in it can keep from scoring one run through multiple innings, making today's sweep of the Pirates into a big win. Yeah. So who knows what lies ahead on the road, you know, what's coming next. Maybe the offense kicks it into gear again and scores enough to keep games from getting too interesting, so the bullpen doesn't have as much pressure on it. Maybe we see some of the looser bits in this bullpen tighten up, like Jordan Romano has.
Yeah.
Or maybe the Phillies can adjust to this. And by the way, when we talk about X factors that you can't plan for, and chaos and baseball being impossible to control or truly build a plan for, this is what we're talking about. No one would have thought the Phillies' most irreplaceable reliever would suddenly disappear and not be an option in October. The Phillies sure didn't. Because, as we're saying, they took a conservative approach to the bullpen and, you know, thought that might, that is, there's no reason to think that wouldn't be enough. And now they got to scramble. It's unfortunate and chaotic, and it's baseball. But something else I noticed about this, just in the overall coverage of it, and I guess this isn't to be expected and not even super distinct, but it just kind of struck me that there was an abrupt kind of coldness to this a bit. The whole Alvarado, you know, the suspension, it's happened, he's gone. By the time the Phillies were talking about it, Alvarado was no longer in Philadelphia. As you said, John, there was no appeal made, no claims of innocence. He was just suspended. He was no longer in the city. And Rob Thompson's like, yeah, you know, it sucks, but we got to move on. It was like a Simpsons monorail. Ain't no Jose Alvarado here, and there never was. And they like slammed the shutters shut. Yeah, but then it's like banners still hanging up in the concourse. So the Phillies chose to put a lot of faith in themselves, which I was like, that's good. I want them to trust themselves as they were like making these definitive moves in the offseason. And those moves are continuously being evaluated to this point. You know, we're kind of going up and down a little bit on some of these guys, but things have changed, you know, as to our perceptions of Romano and Kepler over the season. So, but now they're not going to be able to choose to take that approach. Now they have to, like, they have to really make a bigger move here than just go, well, what if we just, like, got a Rule 5 guy or grabbed a little, you know, this guy off waivers who was hurt last year. I don't really think that's the move here. You know, again, it's year 4. It's all business and win World Series. So time to start asking questions. Are they willing to give up more this year for a new closer? Do the Cardinals have even more leverage while they're dangling Helsley? Was Mick Abel's start today a dinner bell to the rest of the league that's starved for pitching? Are they going to go back to believing that someone who's already here can take another step forward? You know, how many guys doing that is too many to expect it to really work? So Alvarado's put them in a spot here. It'll be very interesting to see what the move is, but I feel like it's got to be bigger than the bullpen moves they've made lately.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, respond to anything Justin just said there too, but I just want to get your take and your level of concern over losing Alvarado and whether you agree with me this could be a potentially World Series altering happenstance that the Phillies are engaged in here.
Well, I'm concerned about that for sure. I hadn't even thought about it until you put it that way, and I kind of
isn't
on
that
the...
fun? Do we get to validate John's derangement here with this
I'm
question?
Not doing that.
I love it.
It is a legitimate because
let's think of the worst thing imaginable. Is Jose Alvarado responsible? Probably.
He has pitched so many postseason innings.
I know.
You're not wrong. I mean, you're not overreacting. I hope I'm not making it seem like you are. It's just like, yeah, let's go straight. And why not go straight to the World Series? Because that's what everybody's thinking. That's what this whole season is. It's just waiting to get back.
That's exactly
right.
Assuming
we're going to win it this time. So why not race ahead that far and wonder how is this horrible situation going to affect that one? And it could very well. Even if we never truly know.
I mean, the Phillies weren't wrong to bet on Alvarado this offseason. Like, they made the right decision. It's sadly Alvarado who made a poor decision putting a substance in his body that wasn't fully vetted or whatever it is that he did. I will say that at the very least, Dombrowski's comments were, I think, sufficiently sympathetic, you know, without being like overly so and removing any blame. He said, you know, he didn't mean to. He's been open about his struggle to lose weight, and, you know, this is how he wanted to deal with it, and it's disappointing, but, you know, we know we didn't do it intentionally, you know, et cetera. So I was glad to hear that, but I don't like agreeing with John when he says stuff like this, but I think it's sort of like this, depending on what they do with at the deadline with a reliever, this is like a pivot. This is a change in direction for the Phillies because they were planning on having Mick Abel somewhere. If they give Mick Abel up for closer or something, I will be horrified because I hate the thought of that. The Phillies have had incredibly awful luck trading for
relievers.
Hang on.
Liz, I'm going to push back on that.
Oh, sure.
I don't think you've thought one thought about Mick Abel until his start today.
Oh, no.
For like months.
No, I haven't.
So I don't think it would devastate you that they trade for a closer, which is what they need.
Oh, sure. It would devastate me because he would be gone. And because my assumption is that for the last 4 years, the Phillies have not been able to sign a reliever at the deadline that didn't suck. I'm going on history here, because if they trade Mick Abel for some guy who blows it, I'm going to be annoyed at that. And I don't even care about Mick Abel all that much. Yeah, I'm saying it. Until he's in the majors full time, I do not care.
You seem to think Carlos Estevez was like a terrible pickup for this team. And he was not.
No.
He was a good pitcher and was their closer and was a good relief pitcher they picked up at the trade deadline.
I haven't looked
year.
At Carlos Estevez's numbers, and I'll admit, I haven't looked at the 2024 stats much. And what sticks in my mind are all of the bad things.
His 2024.
So you're probably right, but go ahead, John.
No, sorry, you're cutting in and out. So I thought I had a little pause there, but no, I think, you know, Carlos Estevez was great at the end. Well, not great. He was very good in the regular season for the Phillies, and obviously against the Mets had had his issues in a couple of those different games. I think that Lindor grand slam kind of like is like that lasting moment that we have of Carlos Estevez. But I mean, it's clear. Here's the thing about Mick Abel and anybody else that they might. I feel like the Phillies are now more motivated.
Exposed.
I guess is the right. Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be more of an impetus to include a top prospect for a relief pitcher that maybe wasn't there before Jose Alvarado came around. And
I think that's what we're saying
here. Like, I think it's great that Jordan Romano seems to have fixed things. I mean, he struck out the side in protecting the 1-0 lead in the ninth inning. Matt Strom has looked much better the last couple of days. Ryan Kirkering is still a little rickety. I need to see a little bit more from a Ryan Kirkering. You could really need him to step up. But they're going to have to trade one of their top prospects for a closer. Felix Bautista of the Orioles. They're having a horrible season. Would not at all surprise me if they were to swing a deal, Felix Bautista, for somebody like Mick Abel. They could absolutely use a starting pitcher, a young starting pitcher like that. Even if they're not contending for this year, they want to be ready to contend next year. And you know, maybe they see something from Mick Abel that would make them be willing to move Felix Bautista. Because they're not moving Andrew Painter. Andrew Painter's not going anywhere.
No.
I still don't think Aiden Miller's going anywhere. But I think other than that, you think seriously about moving any of your top prospects for a top-of-the-line closer, eighth, ninth inning person, because you've got to have that guy in the postseason. Now, does it worry me too, Liz, that reliever will go the way many other relief pitchers the Phillies have acquired at the trade deadline have gone? Absolutely. But I think you're looking for something more established and more dynamic than David Robertson. Which I wasn't. I mean, they didn't give up they gave up Ben Brown, who's a good looking young pitcher, but was not considered like a Justin Crawford or a, you know, that level of a prospect when they got David Robertson. Like he was not an elite closer, even though he had a good season up to that point. He was nearing the end of his career. It was on the downslope. You could all see it coming. I think they are going to go get whatever the top closer is on the market at the trade deadline. My guess is the Phillies and Dave Dombrowski will be willing to surrender one of the top draft picks that aren't named Andrew Painter or Aiden Miller for that guy, whereas they wouldn't have been before this Jose Alvarado news.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. Like they have to change their plans. They've had long held plans that have included a bunch of these guys in the minors. And now, because this has happened with Jose Alvarado, they're digging into their depth, which they have some of, to get a closer. I'm just not someone who is comfortable with the idea of spending a lot of money on relievers. I'm just not. I've been burned too many times. I've watched too many games, period. I've watched too many games to not be impacted by it. So I just am nervous about giving up a lot of money. And I just don't even, I don't have an idea of what closers are going to be on the market that would be worth it. I'm hoping that I'm sure that there probably will be someone, but I don't want to look at that market and be like, well, given this market and the best available here, I guess we'll give up, you know, some big guys for this guy who's the top of these guys that are available. But how good is that guy in comparison to some of the others that aren't? Is he going to be worth that? That's my, I guess, probably irrational fear. But if the market isn't robust and they still need a closer, the price is going to be high regardless.
But what's the alternative? To hoping Jose Ruiz can take a step forward and close out the ninth for you on occasion? Like, I don't see what other option you have other than make and it's unfortunate that you wind up having to trade guys you don't want to trade, but that's also, frankly, trading in a playoff race.
Yeah.
You're going to give up guys you don't want to give up. And I mean from the Phillies' perspective. I don't know how closely they're clutching Mick Abel to their chest at this point, and I don't know if today did anything to loosen or tighten that grip. I don't know how strongly they feel about including Justin Crawford in a trade like that, but boy, oh boy, after all the conversations we've had about outfield help the past few years, for them to trade him for a reliever would be it'd be tough for people to swallow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's ultimately the trade that they make is going to be more unpleasant than probably some of the ones they've made before, because Dave Dombrowski's gotten away with trading guys that were promising but not top prospects and getting people back that made the team better. Not every time, but he was able to do that. There have been very few heartbreaking trades for anyone on like the mainstream level of Phillies prospects these past few years. So this will be new and interesting and different for people. And I'll also add that since you brought them into the conversation, if the Baltimore Orioles start selling in 2025, that ballpark is going to clear out, and they're going to deserve every second of it.
Well,
they're going to deserve every.
I'm going to go to some rushing baseball games.
I think the Orioles would be a strategic sell.
Yeah. No, I hear you. But like in 2025, they would be selling instead of buying. They'd probably in that case. Yeah. I would consider them punting on the season, and that's another wasted year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think they punt on 2025 and say we're geared up for 2026. Obviously, this wasn't our year. We need starting pitching.
That's inexcusable. For this position, 100%.
They absolutely did not do enough to improve their starting rotation this offseason, and those chickens have come home to roost, and we're seeing that pretty clearly with Baltimore. And if there's a way to reload and get some starting pitching, you dangle your closer. You know, I think Felix Bautista will get traded. I think that's absolutely going to happen, and I expect the Phillies to be involved in those conversations, no doubt about it, if and when they happen. But I'll throw one more thing at you, because I know this is something I've bristled against and I've kind of yelled at people when they've mentioned it. And I didn't see the point of it when you still had Jose Alvarado and Matt Strom, two really good left-handers in the bullpen. And I don't like Tanner Banks a whole lot, but he is effective against lefties most of the time. He's not a guy you want in the eighth inning or seventh inning, but, you know, he's a guy that – really, or the sixth inning or the fifth inning.
No, but thanks for the fifth inning.
Wherever.
But you seem – the Phillies.
It's rainy or windy, kind of chilly.
Day, night, home, away.
Whatever.
Sorry, Tanner. Yeah, you're not that bad, Tanner.
Tanner's doing fine. You seem to have now, if you're the Phillies, you seem to have a good amount of starting pitching. And now you can never have enough starting pitching depth, and I totally understand that and totally agree with it. But we're talking about moving Mick Abel back down to AAA so that Taijuan Walker can get his spot in the rotation back, or get a spot in the rotation back because of things. Would you consider, would it be better to move, let's say, Ranger Suarez? I know he's in a contract year. That could cause headaches in the clubhouse, headaches with the agent and everything else. Ranger Suarez is pitching really well in his last two starts out of the rotation. I would hate to move him, but you're going to call up Andrew Painter. The Phillies seem to want to have Taijuan Walker in the starting rotation if there is an injury. You know, there is Mick Abel now, where I'm not, again, saying he's a cornerstone, you're locking him in for 20 starts the rest of the season or anything like that. But if you're reticent to trade away top prospects for a relief pitcher like Felix Bautista or Ryan Helsley or something like that, the only other option then is to take a starting pitcher that you have on hand who has had success in the bullpen before. You've subtracted a really strong left-handed reliever from the bullpen. You could put Ranger Suarez in the bullpen, who's left-handed, and get yourself potentially a high leverage bullpen arm left-handed. And then you could make up for losing Ranger Suarez in the rotation with some combination of Mick Abel, of Andrew Painter, of Taijuan Walker, and of course Aaron Nola when he comes back. I don't want to move Ranger Suarez to the bullpen, but in terms of all the other options that are out there, Liz, would you prefer that to spending to trading somebody like Justin Crawford or Mick Abel or ever for a relief pitcher?
I don't know if I prefer it, but I definitely see the sense in it. I mean, again, it just really super depends on whatever the market looks like, because if there's a guy out there that's worth spending those prospects on, then they'll absolutely do it. But if there's not, I feel like the Ranger Suarez to the bullpen option is a good fallback. It's not the ideal, it's far from it, and you are removing a powerful lefty from the rotation, but you know, it would be better than just leaving things the way they are, which is not great.
This is how I feel right now. That rotation is the beating heart of this team. You got to keep that thing functioning as highly as it possibly can. I would rather see them make a trade for a reliever, because that's something that should have been taken care of before now anyway, and now they're in a really dicey spot. I would rather see Suarez stay in the rotation. It's where he wants to be. I mean, they asked him, and he did the, you know, hey, look, I want to help the team win. I'll do anything. But he was also very clear. I would rather be in the starting rotation for sure. I want him, it takes him you know, a second. He's very sensitive to being in and out of grooves. I want him to be and stay as comfortable as he has been so he can continue to look as dominant as he's been, because, you know, there's a lot of really good pitchers in this rotation, and this team is at its best when they are all pitching as well as possible. I don't want to mess with that. I don't want guys wondering what their role is or wondering if they're, what, you know, if they're coming into the game tonight or whatever. Like, the Ranger Suarez coming back and getting looking as good as he has as quickly after coming back as he has is different from the historical trends of that nature. So I don't want to mess with that at all. I don't want to mess with these guys' heads. They are all these starting pitchers specifically. Their routines are very important to them, and sticking to them are a big part of their mental approach and physical approach. So I would rather keep the rotation intact and not be picking from there to point out who's going to come into a game in a tight spot. I would rather them just, you know, you're going to have to deal some guys you don't want to, but you're going to get the closer you need.
I agree with that. I would rather keep the starting rotation intact. I mean, you are going to have to get creative with the starting rotation too when Andrew Painter comes up, and we've talked about that, like the six-man rotation. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, maybe Ranger Suarez gets moved in a trade or something. You know, that doesn't make as much sense to me because if you've got a team that has a couple of different late-inning bullpen options that they could move, you know, maybe you trade with another contenderish type team for, you know, trade strength for strength, weakness for weakness, and you kind of help each other out. Those kinds of trades happen every once in a while in Major League Baseball. And so then maybe you're moving Ranger Suarez, and that opens up a spot for Andrew Painter. And, you know, if Mick Abel continues to do what he does in AAA, you've got that depth there in AAA to kind of balance out in case anybody else goes down. It's a good problem to have, the Phillies having all of this starting pitching depth right now as we're getting, you know, here in late May. But the bullpen, obviously, something is going to have to be done with it. You know, the Phillies are really fortunate that this next series is against the Colorado Rockies, who've won 8 games this year. So you get 4 games in Colorado against the Rockies, and then you go and play a weekend series in Oakland against the A's. So maybe these things can get punted down the road just a little bit. But, it definitely was a trade deadline altering happening, this Alvarado suspension, to be sure, on Sunday.
It is a more competitive National League this year. It is also, there are a couple of teams that when you see them on your schedule, it's just hitting all sevens on the slot machine, where it's just like, you know, again, if you got no reason to lose to the Pirates, there's not even a rule in baseball or maybe even physics or nature that means you should lose to the Rockies even a single time.
Nope.
And they are very fortunate that this stuff is happening when their opponents are this low, because boy, playing the Rockies it should be as easy as like doing a coloring book. Like their players don't even want to be there. So It is very fortunate that the Phillies are in a spot right now where, you know, that things aren't great, but they kind of got this like nice little cushion to try and figure things out.
Yeah, it's definitely a soft landing, as I think I mentioned earlier in the podcast. That the Phillies have right now as they try to figure out how to make life work without Jose Alvarado. But a great weekend sweep of the Pirates. The offense didn't do a whole lot in this series, and that's okay. They didn't have to do a whole lot in this series. They should get their bats warmed up in Colorado against the Rockies this week. They are now 10 games over 500 on the season, as a season high for the Phillies at 28-18. The Mets are on their way to losing to the Yankees on Sunday Night Baseball. So if that score holds, it'll be, yeah, the Yankees are up 8-2 on the Mets in the eighth inning. So the Phillies will move half a game behind the Mets as they get ready to go on this West Coast road trip. Just winning series and now sweeping a couple here and there. The Phillies are playing really well, and we'll see how they adjust to life without Jose Alvarado here on the West Coast. Let's wrap things up here with some final thoughts. Justin, any final thoughts for you before we get going here?
Yeah, just watched Cody Bellinger hit a grand slam off the Mets, so they are nice and losing 8-2. So that's a nice way to end this weekend of baseball. Mm-hmm. And also, yeah, we're going to have 2 new dirty innings over at the Patreon before the end of the month. Unfortunately, Aaron Nola is a one man dirty inning machine.
Oh man.
And I don't mean just because of what he does. I mean because when he does things, sometimes they'll say, "Hey, you know, something like this hasn't happened in 50, 60 years." So we've had a couple of stats like that pop up after Aaron Nola starts recently, and we're using two different ones to do two different episodes. You know, it's not a slam on him. It's just, you know, if the inspiration is being shown, it's being fed to you right there. It's like, well, it's tough to say no to that. I mean, Jack McFetridge, an entire episode on Jack McFetridge from, I think that's an 1890s guy, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Like, come on. That's like a message just for me. So come on. Yeah.
By the way, the whole Aaron Nola ankle injury thing, like not disclosing it so that you could maintain a competitive advantage to avoid teams bunting on you.
What does a doctor think about that, I wonder?
Well, I mean, like, you're not concerned about him pushing off on that ankle for 100 pitches a night, but the fact that he might have to field a little grounder in front of the mounds gives you the heebie-jeebies, or that you're worried about that kind of agility?
Speaking of things, I don't know if you talked about it on the show, but Bryce Harper's 1,000th career hit was a milestone. RBI. I wanted to note, because I think, like, watching him talk about it and everything, and I think this stuff all means something to him, and I think more so probably than any, like, professional athlete, Harper understands his role on the Phillies and also, like, as a celebrity. And I think, you know, moments like that are big for him, and he probably has, like, stuff displayed in his house, and he should. It's a huge accomplishment. He's up there with names like Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Albert Pujols, Barry Bonds for this many RBI before he turns 33. And I say all that just to say, I honestly, truly don't think any of that stuff matters to him anymore. Like, he knows how to acknowledge it, and it's cool, but, like, if he had a World Series, he'd be answering these questions with a smile on his face, because he'd have, but all he's thinking about, something's eating him alive from the inside out.
Yeah.
And the only thing he has left to do is the only thing this team has left to do, and I think it's the only thing he's thinking about.
That's why I've been saying all year this team's winning the World Series, because I've just kind of felt that, you know, that drive from him. It's going to be harder without Jose Alvarado. Liz, any final thoughts?
Well, I'm depressed now. Thanks. I actually don't have much.
Yeah.
I could say more about Sabre, but you've heard me say it before. Come and join. Come to our convention.
Baseball Research Journal. Yeah.
Yes. You know, come to our convention in Dallas, Texas this year. I will be there. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be there. Yeah. Sabre.org/convention.
All right. Very easy. Sabr.org/convention, just so people know. There's no E in between the B and the R on that. All right, everybody. Well, look, a consequential weekend of Phillies baseball, and now they head on the road to Denver to take on the Rockies for four games. It should be some fun late night baseball watching for you. That'll do it for us here on this edition of Hittin' Season. Don't forget to tell your friends and family members about the podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating for the show, and don't forget you can participate in the show. Send us an email or a voice memo through the hittinseason@phillypen.com email address. If you've got thoughts, questions, whatever it is, record yourself on your phone, email them to us, and we will play them on the show and respond. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.